So I guess she wasn't harmed too much during the during her baby years with all that uncertainty. And I don't know. I guess we just had a lot of faith, all of us, because somehow that drives me crazy to do something like that now. I don't think I could take it.
Was your husband in New Mexico then during that time?
Yes, he during the war, he was in New Mexico. He worked over at Kirtland Field. And I had, my little girl used to come from time to time and stay with us, but it was real hard because we were all working. But it was very difficult.
Does she also work in New Mexico then?
Most of the time, yes. My oldest girl, which was the only one I had at that time, of course. She stayed with my husband's mother and him, and then she stayed with my mother when she was over there.
How was that for you being separated from her?
Very hard. It was very difficult. I don't think she minded it as much as I did, because she was in, you know, familiar surroundings with a lot of family around. She was her first grandchild on both sides, the only grandchild for a long time, and so she got a lot of attention. And I don't think it bothered her as much as it did me. I don't know, people are tough, they survive. She never really liked it here in California. She always liked New Mexico better. I think it was real hard for her to adjust to the change. But we all did. We survived. I guess that's the whole purpose.
How did you feel about people?
Well, I don't remember it. I don't remember it being real difficult. I don't remember any of us drinking coffee, because I can remember always. We were very popular with the neighbors because we always gave them our coffee coupons and things, so evidently we weren't... I don't recall us having any real difficulty there, because maybe we just didn't... we adjusted, I suppose, very easily, because, let's see, sugar was rationed, and I remember coffee was rationed, and I think, as I remember, meat, you just couldn't hardly get it at all. Of course, I have always been more or less a vegetarian, and that didn't bother me. So we did seem to not to have them. And food, well, I don't think it was that expensive. I don't recall it being, you know, like now where you have to think twice. I don't recall it being real expensive. I think it was scarce. I believe the price of coffee went way up. I can remember people moaning about that. And sugar, I was trying to think what else. And I remember gasoline. Well, we didn't have a car anyway. We walked or rode the bus. I did have an old piece of a car there, but it was too uncertain to get gasoline, so I guess I sold it or gave it away or whatever. Got rid of it. It wasn't much of a car anyway. But we always rode the streetcar. That was before buses. I never could understand. We had good service then. I never could understand when the smog began to get worse that we turned over to motor buses, because that was fast. You could get down here from Los Angeles down to the beach in about 30 minutes or so on that red car. I mean, they just flew down here. And they were prompt, and the service was fast. You don't find that with a bus. And I don't know why they took those, because that was clean transportation too, and especially a city that has the smog that Los Angeles has, which smog that became very apparent during the war. We didn't know what to call it, but we blamed it on working nights, because your eyes were always tearing, and that was the beginning of smog. And of course, it's gotten worse and worse, and as it got worse, we changed from the old electric streetcars, and that was good transportation. And another thing that they always waited at the transfer point. They don't do that now. You know, you can be transferring from one bus and the other bus will just pull away and leave you there like they don't know there's such a thing as transfer. They never did that. The guy would always wait for the other one to come up so that, you know, so you could make your connections. Never had any problems with transportation. We did a lot of walking too, which was real good. But I'll never be able to understand why a city like Los Angeles would give up a good transportation system that we had and go for buses, which have never, as far as I'm concerned, it's pitiful to try to get around here. No wonder everybody drives a car, because the few times that I ride the bus, I usually walk most of the way, because I get so bored just sitting there waiting. And I don't know how you have to allow yourself a lot of time to be able to get to work on time if you ride the bus, because they're very uncertain, at least the schedules around here are. I really hated to see them give up those old streetcars. Go all the way to Long Beach. And I mean, they moved and they were right on schedule, right on the dot. You could get your little schedule out and go there and wait for the bus now, or the streetcar. And they're, as I say, very clean transportation.
What kind of social life did you have during the war?
Well, there used to be, we used to go to the Palladium, big group of us. They had all the big bands. We used to go to those theaters up and down Broadway, had live, they had the big bands. And we usually went to, especially the Palladium. I think the Palladium was just about a regular thing for just about everybody then, whenever we stayed home a lot. We went to the zoo and, you know, we just stayed, especially, you know, when my brothers or some of the other servicemen, you know, the other people that lived with us, his relatives would come, that when the service came in, we would usually go, a great big group of us would go to the Palladium and kind of think of some of the other places that we were at. The Million Dollar Theater had live entertainment there. In fact, this Lucille Willie's father played in the orchestra there. Now, what they had, I don't know, but we did that a lot. We went to the movies a lot, too. I don't think what else was there to do. We used to go to the zoo. In fact, we used to walk over to the zoo. That was a good long hike. That would be on a Sunday. But then, you see, we didn't have a lot of free time because we worked Saturdays and Sundays. In fact, I'm sure we worked a six-day week as a regular thing, and we worked a lot of seven-day weeks, too. And I don't recall us having a lot, because it seemed like kind of a special thing when we would go out, like, to the Palladium and places like that. But I guess the Palladium had dances every weekend, maybe all through the week. I don't know. I wouldn't have gone through the week. And they used to have big big-name entertainers on those theaters up and down Broadway there. And if I remember, they had some kind of stage shows there at the Million Dollar. Because we used to go there quite a bit. I guess that was about it.
Did you make friends with people at work?
Oh, yes. It was very easy to get, you know. Everybody felt there was a closeness there. But, you know, like I say, you just weren't strangers. I guess the thing that bothered me the most at work was the black people always kept to themselves. I remember they used to, they had lunch, they always sat one little corner of the place, and everybody else was sitting over someplace else. And that seemed real strange to me, anyway.
You think that was directed from themselves or from outside?
Oh, from the outside, yes, at that time. Discrimination was very evident. Well, look at it in the service. They had segregation in the service. And when the servicemen came back, I think that was the beginning of the civil rights, because people began to wake up and say, you know, they're good enough to go over there and risk their life with everybody else, and then they come back and they can't find a house. And, you know, things were hard then, but if you were a minority race, well, forget it, because you couldn't get into anything. And I think that the people began to think for themselves, and why was I? I'm over there fighting for freedom. For who? You know, here I am, you know. Well, I think there was a reluctance to even to hire blacks to any degree at the beginning of World War II. I think people begin to, well, to, there was just the beginning of an awareness there, and I think among the minorities, too, that why are we allowing this? You know, my goodness sakes, we're an American citizen when it comes to, a very equal when it comes to go to be drafted, to go to fight. And when we come back home, all of a sudden the freedom vanishes. And, well, they really didn't have it in the service, because I can remember that was a very difficult thing, too, when they were, blacks were regulated to just certain jobs, categories, and
do you remember specific incidences in the plant that around racial discrimination?
Well, the only one that I recall very vividly was this friend of mine, Ann Alfonso. In fact, I gave her name in, too. I was hoping that I gave her name. She lives in Philadelphia now. That maybe she would remember more than I did. She used to talk to this black fellow. We all worked together there, and she used to talk to him during, and then her lead man came over and told her not to talk to this black guy, and or she was going to get fired, but she went on talking to him. Well, actually, we all did, but she, I don't know, maybe they were from the same place or had something in common, or maybe they worked closer. I don't remember why it was specifically her, but they never fired her. She never quit talking to him, so I guess that was a step in the right direction, as I remember, but that bothered me a lot, too. In fact, at one time, you know, unions even outlawed blacks. Of course, nobody ever heard of the other minorities. They didn't even know they existed. Blacks, I guess, because it was kind of obvious, but forget the rest. Yeah, I remember that. In fact, I worked with Nat Cole's sister. I'll try my best to think of her name. I used to know it like I knew my own. Actually, after a while, we were, because I remember that's how I got quite close to her. We used to eat lunch. We used to go and eat lunch. My sister and Ann and I can't remember who, Helen, I guess, we used to go over to them and eat lunch. They didn't come to eat lunch with us. And we got quite well acquainted. And in fact, she gave us some records, some of Matt Cole's records. He was just coming then. He wasn't the big star that he is now. She was a real sweet person, a real tall girl, as I remember her. And very, very nice. But it was rather new to me, because I was from New Mexico and we had very few. In fact, where we grew up out there in the country, I don't remember any black families living around us at all, or a black child ever being in school. It was all Latin. It was rather a new thing, but I didn't understand them being so segregated, because we weren't segregated, at least where I lived in New Mexico, there wasn't anything. Of course, the Latin was in the majority then, so you'd have a little trouble segregating, which makes a little difference maybe, but I don't know, the question had just never come up. There were very few black people living in New Mexico at that time, in the part where we were. I couldn't see the, no, it was very obvious, the attitude. But,
the first woman that I interviewed who had an anti-racist viewpoint, or an anti-racist feeling.
Oh, really? Well, goodness sakes, I just want you to know that I walked, with Martin Luther King, and that I was very well trained. That was, to me, the most, I would say, painful and rewarding part of my life is the time that I spent in the civil rights movement. I looked for them. They didn't look for me. Yes, walked with Cesar Chavez many times. Many times. In fact, Cesar Chavez's wife just called me last night. The youngest son has a, I don't know if you see him, but that was when they marched up the coast here, and we, our CSO, fixed lunch in that little park. Our group here fixed lunch and took it upstairs, and then we didn't walk with them, we ran. Mm-hmm. I told Cesar, why don't you tell me that was a marathon race? I thought you were going to march. We ran after them until they ended up here in Ocean Park. All of our CSOs were participating in that, which was very, very nice.
What is CSO?
What I work for is community service organization.
God, I think we better dust. Well, the wind blew the other day.
I wonder if they have any nice pictures of Bob.
Oh, wow. Didn't they want from, well, you would remember UCRC, United Civil Rights Committee. I'm here somewhere, but this is a real good friend of mine. He was over there with the band as well. Sam Block. And this is, you know, Old Miss, the first one. A real good friend of mine. Daughter. That was, when Fannie Lou Hamer first started going to jail for, she died recently. I felt so terrible about that. And I'm here somewhere too, I don't know just where. But we did an awful lot of walking, I'll tell you. Sam is from Mississippi. And I wish somebody would interview Sam. He stayed all night climbed up a telephone pole and stayed up there all night hiding, you know, from those, the Klan people that they were after the group, and he hung on to a telephone pole all night. They couldn't see him, it was dark, but they did. Terrible experience. But he came over here to California and got rich and forgot all about civil rights and everything else, but that was, I probably have a picture of Martin Luther King somewhere, but I say that was very, very rewarding. And I would say the civil rights movement stemmed from the war years. Fannie Lou Hamer came several times to visit and stayed at my house, stayed with me there. Martin Luther King never came to stay at my house.
Have you heard Sweet Honey in the Rock? Bernice Reagan and four black women have a group. They sing a song about Fannie Lou Hamer and
oh, yeah. Well, we were doing a big voter registration drive. I guess that's why James Meredith came to Los Angeles, I guess, to lead it. Fannie Lou, let me run over there and see if I can find some of that stuff. I've never been idle. I do feel that was the beginning, you know, after the war, and then blacks coming out and working, and you know, having to be accepted to work in the war plant. I remember my aunt. That was after the war. She's from. She's the only one of my mother's. Well, she's the only relative that I know of either side. The only way I know her is because she came over here. She's. What little town is that? She worked for the government there. Anyway, in her little town, that was before, you know, before they started sitting in at the lunch counters and things like that. And they had these, they were dark-skinned students. They might have been Indian or from some foreign country that were going to, I guess, some school around there. Anyway, they were over there for some reason. They were allowed to go into wherever it was, motels, restaurants, and things. And some of the people there took offense to that and decided if these dark-skinned people from way off, you know, who knows where, can come in here, then we want to know why all the black people can't just come in here and do whatever. And that worked out real good because the town people, if they had never gone there, I guess the town people never would have noticed that anything was amiss. Cause, you know, as I say, we just accept and just go on, you know, from day to day. And people just don't think for themselves. We just take whatever's handed down to us and move on, or move backwards. As far as I'm concerned, it's backwards. But that kind of riled them up a little bit, so they opened. That was just a little. I'm trying to think of the name of it. There she was. But anyway, they decided those students those students from some foreign land could have privileges, and everybody there better have privileges. So. It was just an automatic thing, so there wasn't any upsets or violence about it or anything, which was wonderful, I thought.
But she was working, she was part of that.
She worked for the civil service, and it must have been some kind of a base or something. I never get the facts. And she, in fact, I don't know how she managed it. She didn't retire till she was 70. I guess you could either retire at 65 or work on up to 70, and I know she didn't retire till she was 70, because she liked to work. And that was very unfortunate, too. Right after she retired, she had all these big plans, as everyone has, I guess, to do this and that. She waxed her floor, and I think her granddaughter had a little puppy, and the puppy wet the floor, and she slipped in it and broke her hip, and she'd never been able to do much of anything since. It was real sad. They put operated on it, I don't know how many times, and she's got pins and needles and thread, too, I guess, all in her hip, and she just never got to, she can hardly get around now. She can't, she'd love to come to visit us, but she likes California real well, but she just can't sit on the plane, now that's on a plane that long. She's torture, so I'm trying to get up enough nerve and time to go over there to see her, because she's not getting any younger. It's been quite a while since she retired. But I guess all the people over there aren't Klansmen. There's some good thinking people.
Was the beginning of your activism during the war year?
Well, maybe sort of an awakening for the need of it. Because of my lack of exposure, I would say, before that. I would say so, yes. I think for a lot of people, there was a change, and I really feel that probably the black servicemen that went to war, that came back, just decided that they weren't going to have that same old thing anymore, and then thank God for Martin Luther King and the time that he was able to be here and do what he did, because without him, I'm sure the civil rights movement would have, well, I guess we shouldn't say that, because a lot of people say you put too much credit to one individual, but I think I think history has proved me correct. I always said without Martin Luther King, there wouldn't be a civil rights movement, and there sure isn't, is there? And I say the same thing about Cesar Chavez. If without Cesar Chavez, the farm workers movement would fall apart, too. And I do think you have to give credit to that one person, because you know, there's been many attempts to organize farm workers to do something about their plight, which certainly has improved. But it never went any real direction until Cesar Chavez came along. But these are persons that's their whole life. I know I'm very close to Cesar's wife, and I know that he certainly doesn't. I'm so happy that they got their family started before. He got so involved because he certainly wouldn't have time now. And he certainly has a wonderful wife, too. I don't think that she's given the credit. Well, women never are the credit that they deserve, because she's the one that held it together. And without her support, and I'm sure he said the same thing, it's not just my observation, that he never would have been able to do what he's able to do, too. But in fact, he's practically a stranger to his children. He's never at home. Now it's a lot different, but of course the children are grown up and married. Now they're all married but one. And the youngest boy just hit in fact, Helen just called me last night to tell me that Bertie, the youngest, has a baby boy. They just had a baby, and they named him Caesar. That's the first grandchild, you know, with his name. That always bothered me. I kept telling those kids, somebody better name some of these grandchildren Caesar. So he finally got his grandson named Caesar, which made me very happy. But I still say without Caesar and all the sacrifices that he made, and his family, of course, had to make for him to be able to give that money, have paid off. But that's moving backwards, too, now. There's a lot of anti-farm labor law legislation coming up, and there are very conservative state officials elected who, of course, will, I'm sure, support that. And I guess Governor Brown has to go out sometime. He's been a real friend to the farm workers. He certainly has. I forgave him for running across the country with Linda Ronstadt because he's such a good friend. Well, I just think that was a kind of a foolish thing for a man that was aiming towards the President of the United States to do. I do. I think it's very foolish. Although I think everybody has their right to their own. But if you're in the public eye, you really can't can't go quite that far, really, let's face it, because as I said, he'll never get the old conservative liberal vote. He'll never make it, and he sure didn't, did he? But I hope we could keep him for governor here a little bit longer because of his big help to the farm. But he can only go so far, and he'll only be governor for so long, so I think that it's very important. I do consider my involvement in civil rights movement one of the most important parts of my life. I certainly do. And I'm real saddened to see that it seems to have been in vain. If things continue, if the trend continues, we will be back to go, you know, we never reached our goal of integrated housing. We never did. In fact, we wouldn't be worried about integrated schools and busing had we reached that goal of integrated housing. And I would like to see housing integrated, not just ethnically, but economically. I don't think all the rich people should live in Beverly Hills or the Palisades or any set location. I think that there should be an ethnic mixture and an economic mixture. And then you wouldn't have your ghettos, and you would be able to control the crime. You know, crime has become completely uncontrollable. I don't think there's any area, any section where people will argue with you over that. And we're not making any headway, or we're making very little headway in combating it, too. And we can cite unemployment and all the other things that poverty and unemployment and this, that, and the other, but there's a lot of white-collar crime, and there's a lot of rich crime, too. I think you can't just pinpoint it there, but I think were we to integrate economically, that we would have some chance of controlling it. We wouldn't have concentrations where crime is just allowed to run absolutely wild, which is what we have here. We have
here in Venice?
Well, all over Los Angeles, but Venice has been number one for quite some time. We have a big crime problem now. But you see, we're the poor able to, and middle income able to, live over in a better neighborhood and get some of that protection that they have. It'd make a lot of difference. But I feel that we're very much on a backward trend as far as problem solving of all kinds. We haven't done a thing with inflation. That certainly shouldn't be a problem. That, you know, a country that has the resources available that we do. I think I'm going to have to...